70. Clive wiped his hands on a towel. There wasn't much blood on the bodies. He'd expected them to be leaving rivers of blood in the hall and on the stairs. It wasn't much worse than dealing with a leaky garbage bag. That thought bounced in his head for a moment, and his empty stomach churned. He paused to get his thoughts back under control. The last thing they needed was someone else losing it. He took a few very slow breaths, thought about Debbie, and pictured how they'd rebuild their home again.
"It's just like any gross job," he told himself.
He'd been a dishwasher in high school and a janitor for the 2 years he was at college. There'd been awful stuff to deal with in both jobs. The trick was to put a little mental distance between yourself and whatever it was you had to touch.
"God, a drink would be great right now."
His jaw still ached from Andrew's backhand. Clive tapped one of his molars with his tongue for the upteenth time and felt it shift ever so slightly under the probe. Moving the smaller men hadn't been a problem. None of them weighed much more than Clive, so it had just been a matter of tying their ankles together. A tip from Tim, and it also wasn't good to wonder how Tim knew that and how many times he'd done it himself, and dragging the men across the lounge and down the stairwell. That went slowly until Clive assured himself the first man's head wasn't going to crack open as it bumped down the stairs one at a time. The large man had been more troublesome. Aside from the extra weight, he was built wrong. He had the large eyes and overwide mouth, but there was more to it than that. When Clive lifted the corpse's legs to tie them, they bent in the wrong place. The knees were too high and the hips too loose, and the fingers were long. Not alien long, but just long enough. It was most noticeable on his left hand where Tim had broken two of the fingers. There was a term some of Clive's friends used, the ones who did a lot of computer gaming, the uncanny valley. It was a psychological threshold where things looked very human but still weren't quite human enough. It was why some mannequins were creepy and others weren't, and CGI monsters looked better than CGI people. The large man was in the uncanny valley. He was a living person, or had been, whose features were almost human, but not quite human enough. He was creepy as hell. Andrew had said the man's name, but when Clive stopped to look at the body, the name that came to mind was Grendel. In a way, the old woman was easier. There was no way to mistake her for a normal person. Her face looked like a frog had stretched a human mask over its head. Her skin was pale gray and slick, like an eel. When she died, her body had stretched out flat and let them all see how off her proportions were. All five bodies were in a line for now. There was a fair-sized ledge of concrete behind the building. Most of the slab had come through with them. The back fence hadn't, though, and there was a 10-foot drop to the ground below. Clive cleaned the last of the woman's clammy slickness off his hands and tossed the towel on top of her body. The idea of Debbie touching it or using it on dishes made his stomach swirl again. Oscar didn't have instructions on the back of his door. What they found was an apartment which stretched over the entire corner of the building. All three floors were connected by an ornate spiral staircase. Roger searched the top floor bedroom while Nate went through the kitchen and Veek ransacked the first floor office. Twice. She stomped back upstairs and the wrought iron clanged under her footsteps.
"Okay," Veek said to Nate. "How can he not have a computer? There are people living in mud huts who have laptops."
"Maybe he doesn't have one for a reason," said Nate. "Maybe his apartment is at some magnetic juncture or something in the machine. They might not work in here."
"Or maybe he's just an old guy who never got a computer," she sighed. "I don't think we're going to find anything."
"We've only been looking for, what, an hour?" She nodded.
"Yeah, we've been searching these three rooms for an hour and none of us have found anything besides the keyring."
Veek had found it in the unlocked top drawer of the desk with Oscar's checkbook. Most of them were for the various apartments, the numbers written on small cardboard circles wired to the keys. There were four mismatched keys bound together with yellowed tape. A manila tag on the largest was labeled 14 in blue ink. It crossed Nate's mind one of the keys fit a padlock that was still tumbling toward a pair of alien suns, along with Mrs. Knight. "Maybe you're right," he said. He'd rooted through the kitchen, moved through the bookshelf, and even pulled the couch apart.
"Nothing upstairs," said Roger. He'd come down the spiral staircase. "Box under his bed with some old pictures, lots of World War II stuff with tanks. Went through his dresser and his closet, found a few old letters, box of tax stuff going back to the 80s. He shrugged. "Nothing like what we want, though."
"Toilet tank?" suggested Nate. Roger shook his head.
"Checked it."
"There has to be something," said Veek. "How can you be in charge of all this stuff and not have something written down somewhere?"
"Might have tattooed it on his arm if it was that important," said Roger. "Who knows?"
"Or," said Nate, "maybe all he knows is pull this lever in case of emergency or something like that." He shook his head. "I think this is the final nail in the coffin, though."
"Bro," said Roger, "not the right expression."
He shook his head. "Sorry," said Nate. "We're going to have to go out there and try to find him. And if we're lucky, he'll be okay enough to tell us how to get out of here."